Good morning, folks. This is Will Aitchison with Labor Relations Information System. This is our ongoing interview podcast series, and I'm thrilled to have today on the other end of the line Tim Young. He's a partner in the law firm of Rennie Sloan Holtzman and Sakai, which is a Northern California management side law firm. Welcome, Tim, to our podcast.
Thank you, Will.
For those of you who don't know anything about Tim, let me tell you that at least from my perspective, he's a bit of a national treasure. He edits something known as the California PERB blog. This is a blog that we will post a link to on our webpage, and it is the best blog out there anywhere in the country on the doings of a labor board. Tim's blog is focused on what California's Public Employment Relations Board deals with, but really the cases that he talks about and the ease with which he writes about those cases make this blog a national treasure. What happens in California will come soon to your neighborhood, sooner or later. And so I heartily recommend to all of our listeners, get online, subscribe to this blog. It's wonderful to read. And Tim, thanks for doing it. I know these things are a lot of work and I appreciate it.
Sure, my pleasure, Will.
Tim's background, as I mentioned, is that of a management side labor lawyer. He graduated from the University of California Davis Law School. He's handled litigation in all sorts of different forums, but for the last decade or so of his life, he's really specialized in both advising Public Employment Relations Board, the Public Employment Relations Board, on issues, and also representing employers in PERB issues and other labor issues. I wanted Tim to talk about the latest case he blogged about because I think it's a big deal. This is a case involving a no-contact order. Now, you probably all encountered no-contact orders. These are orders that are given by an employer to an employee, usually who is the subject of an internal affairs investigation. And the order goes something like, while this investigation is pending, you may not discuss the matter that is the subject of this investigation. Usually there's a period put right there. It may go on to say with anyone, or there may be some exceptions, but that's generally what a no contact order is. And that's the case that California's PERB had to decide whether a no contact order was legal. Now, Tim, before we turn to the actual case PERB was deciding, this is an issue that's been addressed in the private sector, isn't it?
That's right. The National Labor Relations Board, in the case that we call Banner Health, addressed this issue about a year ago, and that was a decision that PERB relied on heavily in this most recent decision involving the L.A. Community College District. But yeah, the NLRB similarly held that a no-contact rule as a blanket rule that you issue to employees is unlawful because it chills the employee's right to talk with other employees about working conditions, your grievances, et cetera.
Yeah, when we look at just the NLRB case right now, the private sector case that doesn't have direct applicability in the public sector, but when we look at it, were there any tests that the NLRB set forth that told us when a no-contact order might be legal?
Well, yeah, in Banner Health, the NLRB did mention a few things. It did say that it did not like boilerplate language, the idea that you issue a no-contact rule as a matter of course, even in an investigation. What it said is it wanted some analysis by the employer, really on a case-by-case basis, as to whether there was a fear of, one, destroying evidence, two, the need to protect witnesses, three, a need to prevent testimony from being fabricated, or four, preventing a cover-up. Those are kind of the things it mentioned, not a necessarily exhaustive list, but those are some of the things that the NLRB wanted to see before and the court issued a no contact order.
Is it safe to say that what the most important takeaway from Banner Health was is that a blanket no contact order issued by an employer in all disciplinary investigations, that is illegal under the NLRA?
That's correct. Right. And that's what that decision focused on, that it wanted the employer to really evaluate whether such a rule was necessary. And now, quite frankly, keep it narrow.
Now let's turn to the California case, and it involved the Los Angeles Community College District. What was going on in that case?
Basically, you had a community college professor, and apparently he used to teach, you know, two or three classes a year. And one year, the dean reduced his workload, which had the effect of reducing his salary. And he started writing emails to the dean saying, hey, you're strangling me financially, why are you trying to kill me, things like that, using words that caused the district to, you know, question the soundness of the professor's mind.
Words like strangle and kill?
Yeah, not as a kill, but strangle. You're trying to strangle me. Why are you trying to, you know, destroy me financially? You're going to take away my house, you know, things like that, that apparently caused the district to question his fitness for duty.
And so what did the district do?
They put him on administrative leave and sent him to a fitness for duty examination to get a determination that he was physically fit, probably mentally fit, to teach. And as part of being placed on administrative time off, ATO, they sent him a letter, a standard letter that they had, which contained the standard language, which said that, quote, you're hereby directed not to contact any members of the faculty, staff, or students. And a copy of this letter was mailed to his union representative. But that language, the no contact rule, was standard language in the district's letter for anyone put on ATO.
Was there a, that's a direction. That's an order. You're directed not to contact anybody. Was there a suggested or potential punishment along with the no contact order? If you violate the rule, this will happen?
No, there was not.
Okay. So we end up with the equivalent of an unfair labor practices complaint that is being filed. And I think it's time we took a little pause and explained to the rest of the country something about California's collective bargaining laws. There's not just one public sector collective bargaining law in California, right?
That's correct. There are, I think, seven right now. It changes almost on an annual basis, but yes, there are several of them. Probably four main ones. There's one covering school districts, which is the one at issue here.
And the one that covers public safety employees, that's generally referred to as the Meyer-Milius-Brown Act, right?
Correct. And so that covers what we call local entities, primarily cities and counties. And so that's going to cover, you know, 90% of the public safety folks in California. There's a separate one for school districts, another one for higher education, so University of California and the California State University System. And so those are big ones, and then another one for state agencies.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, is there any reason to think that PERB's decision under any of these laws would be different than it was in the Los Angeles Community College case?
No. I think PERB is going to apply its ruling here to all three other acts. If anything, there was probably the better argument here not to apply Banner Health, just because the language in the National Labor Relations Act on concerted activities doesn't really appear in the school district, what we call ERA, the EERA Act, but it does, you know, appear in the MMBA, or at least there have been decisions talking about concerted activities under the MMBA. So yes, I think that PERB is going to apply the decision here to the other acts.
And what does PURB say about this no contact order?
They basically follow the direction of the National Labor Relations Board and Banner Health, and they say that a blanket rule chills employees' right to talk to each other and talk to their union, and therefore it's unlawful because there's a threat of harming employee rights. Now, they do say that you can justify a no-contact rule based on operational necessity, but they hold that the district here didn't make such a showing. And so it was clear from their discussion that they were looking for basically what the NLRB is looking for, some showing that the investigation that you're conducting, the nature of it, requires some type of no-contact rule. And what PURB held was that the district didn't meet that burden here to demonstrate that.
What about the fact that there was no threat of a penalty for violation of this no-contact order? Did that play a part in PURB's decision?
That was one of the arguments the district made, that there was no threat. And what PURB said, there doesn't have to be, that was one of the statements it made, there doesn't have to be an explicit threat to the employee in order to constitute unlawful interference under ERA. And as you mentioned, I think PURB is going to rule the same way under all the other acts in California. That the idea there is you've already given the employee direction not to do something. The employee doesn't have to guess as to what you're going to do, whether you're going to give them a free pass, whether they'll be disciplined, even fired, that the direction alone has the potential to chill the employee's conduct, and that is what PURB said is unlawful.
Now, I'd like you to put your prognostication hat on for a moment and try to predict how this ruling is going to apply in several different scenarios. And I understand we're talking very, very generally here, and you know, we'll have to see how all this plays out. But I'm still going to ask you the questions anyway. In public safety, it's you see it very commonly, particularly, I think, in police departments, sheriff's departments, and state police agencies. You see very commonly no-contact orders issued in every internal affairs investigation. Is that going to be problematic if PURB's ruling is applied in other states and applied throughout California under the Meyer-Milius-Brown Act?
Yes, very potentially. I think certainly when you read the LA Community College case here from PURB, you would have to come to the conclusion that you can't issue a blanket no-contact rule even in a public safety IA-type situation, that you should really evaluate each particular situation to see whether a no-contact rule is justified. Now, I will throw in there's one interesting wrinkle in California in that we did have a court case way back in 2008 involving the LA Deputy Sheriff's Association where I think it involved a police shooting, but basically it was a situation where they had what we call an anti-huddling rule. What would happen was after a shooting, the police union representative would get there and all the officers would get in a group and chat with their attorney or union rep. And the sheriff's ordered that not happen, that you not do that until after you talk to the IA investigator. And the issue was whether that rule was subject to collective bargaining, whether it was within the scope of bargaining. And the court said it was not because of the fundamental public interest in, you know, looking into a police shooting, investigating what happened and preventing key witnesses from corroborating testimony. Now, that's a little bit different than what we have here because the issue here is not whether it's within scope, but whether there is unlawful interference. But in my mind, these are very closely linked cases. And so as a management advocate, I would say that especially in police officer situations, you know, there may be a very, very strong argument that these no-contact rules should presumptively be valid. And I think you can make an argument under the deputy sheriff's case that should be the case. So I don't know that a court is going to necessarily adopt PURB's rule wholesale, particularly in situations involving public safety where you really, you know, given what's happened nationally, you really want to make sure the public has confidence in, you know, police work and what they're doing and the integrity of an investigation into a police shooting. So that's going to be a very interesting area to watch.
I thought that Los Angeles County case was an interesting one, particularly because it seemed like such an unusual practice to have different officers who'd been involved in a shooting all together in a room talking about it before they were interviewed. What I'd like to do is kind of change the facts of that a little bit, Tim. What if it's only one officer who is involved in a shooting? And let's make this a department that does concurrent internal affairs and criminal investigations. So out at the scene of the shooting, you have both IA investigators and whoever is doing the criminal investigation. And the department wants to issue a no contact order to the officer who was involved in the shooting. How is that going to play under PURB's decision in the Los Angeles Community College case?
Yeah, I think if you read the LA Community College case, you would come to the conclusion that even a no-contact order in that situation is highly problematic. Again, because you're issuing it as a matter of course, and you're not considering whether, you know, it could be narrower, or there's some exception to the rule in a certain situation where you may not need it. However, I certainly would take the position that, you know, in that type of situation, given the facts, that there should be a presumption that a no-contact rule in that situation is permissible. I'm hoping the courts are going to see it that way, even if PURB may not. In my mind, a no-contact rule in that situation, you know, doesn't last for that long of a period. In my mind, it's typically just until you've given your statement to the investigators. And in my mind, that doesn't really have the same chilling effect as the situations that you're dealing with in Banner Health and in the LA Community College District, especially given, you know, the national discussion over police shootings and the need to make sure that they're justified and for the public to have confidence in their police agencies. I think in that situation, a no-contact rule has to be issued. So I'm hopeful that the court's going to see it that way. I think that is going to be a very, very interesting area to watch and see how this decision is played out.
Let's change the facts just a little bit again, if we can. But let's take it in this most difficult of situations, the officer-involved shooting situation. Do we have some sort of different analysis if the no-contact order makes an exception for individuals with whom the target of the investigation is in a privileged relationship? And by that, I mean, can the no-contact order extend to stop the subject of the investigation from speaking with his or her spouse or minister or doctor or lawyer?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I mean, the concern of PURB is the ability of employees to talk to each other, not necessarily talking to their union rep or their attorney. It's the idea of concerted activity, employees getting together, talking about their employment situation, you know, talking about their grievances and trying to figure out what to do. So in my mind, it's not really concerned with your ability to talk to, you know, your spouse, or, you know, physician, your priest, your attorney. And so I do think the analysis would have to be at least tweaked to consider that type of situation if a no-contact rule made certain exceptions like that. In my mind, it certainly wouldn't have the same chilling effect. But again, if the idea is they don't want to chill your ability to talk to other employees, if the no-contact rule still covered that, I still see PURB reaching the same conclusion they did in the LA County case.
No blanket orders.
Right. I'm talking about other
now, for my last case, that or last example, that I want to give. Let's put it in a firefighter context, and let's make it an extremely sensitive internal affairs investigation. So let's make it a sexual harassment investigation, where you may have employees complaining about other employees, and there may be a fairly large group of employees who were involved either as witnesses or complainants or suspects. What about the legality of a no-contact order given to all those people who are going to be interviewed that attempts to apply to their ability to communicate with their union? So the no-contact order doesn't deal with talk to each other or talk to your spouse or talk to your minister or anything like that. The no-contact order is, while this investigation is pending, we do not want you communicating with the union. And the reason I toss that out to you, Tim, is I have heard from employers who have a great deal of concern that they might be able to prevent employees from talking to each other. We know now that's not always going to be the case. They might be able to prevent that. But what good is that if employees can all talk to their union and that's where the information is collected and collated and potentially redistributed?
Yeah, I mean, that gets into sort of other areas in terms of Weingarten rights and you know, right to talk to an attorney and whatnot. I think even so these cases kind of deal with the idea of the chilling effect of talking to other employees. But certainly, under all the acts administered by CURB, there's a right of employees to participate in activities of the union itself. And in talking to a union representative and being able to have a union representative there in a disciplinary-type situation or even in a highly unusual-type situation. There's a court case talking about that. So I think that the analysis will be the same from CURB's perspective in that if you try to prevent an employee from talking to their union rep, that PERB would hold that also, at a minimum, has a harm to employee rights and therefore would be unlawful interference unless you can show a necessity for the particular order. So in your situation, you know, if you could show a particular need to have some type of no-contact order, I think you could try to make that showing. I think it would be extraordinarily difficult to try to prevent an employee from talking to a union rep or their attorney. I see that being a very, very difficult showing to make.
Well, Tim, thank you so much for participating in this interview. It's going to be an interesting case to watch play out, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. In the next couple of years, and I think this decision hasn't quite sunk in yet for the public sector in California, but I think it will very quickly. And I think employers are going to have to take notice and really evaluate these no-contact orders that they give out as a matter of routine.
Okay, folks, that's been Tim Young with a partner in the California law firm of Rennie, Sloan, Holtzman, and Sakai, talking about the recent decision from California's Public Employment Relations Board in the Los Angeles Community College District case on no contact orders. Tim, thanks again for participating and have a good day.
Great. Thank you, Will. My pleasure.